Well, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good to see you here today. Our topic is Jesus Changed Everything. That's our theme for the series. And today we've got Jesus, the Foundation of Relationships. And I started thinking about this foundation for relationships. Oh, okay. As a teacher, I see year eight girls who are very good at socialising. Some not so much, but others, excellent. And far better than whatever I have ever achieved in my life. So there's some people who are just really good at social awareness and interacting and friendships and those sorts of things. Relationships is their thing. And there's others of us who might not find it so easy to do that. So what sort of, if you're not good at relationships, like naturally speaking, what sort of things might interest you? And it occurred to me that the world of work or tools, maybe sport as well, various things. There's various things out there in the world which are not so relational and perhaps easier to manage sometimes. And that got me thinking, about the world of not relationships. I'm going to press this button. Yeah, okay. Tools. Some boys like their tools. And here are some men working away on some woodworking, with their woodworking tools. And the guy on the left there, he's nearly got a saw through his head, but just like, don't worry about the OH&S issues there. He's working with a mallet and a chisel. This is from a long time ago. This is 4,400 years ago. Okay, they found this in Egypt, this image. The next guy's got a saw, and my understanding is it's probably a copper saw, so you can't push it, you have to pull it. The pulling action is what cuts, because if you push it, the material won't be strong enough, it'll bend. Okay, these days we've got steel, but they didn't have steel back then. The next two guys are probably not using planes, they're probably sanding down the desk there with blocks of sandstone, so they're sanding. And the last guy's got a drill. The one on the right-hand side, he's got a bow drill. So he holds it there and he pulls the drill back and forward and drills a hole. Great. Okay, so I've got some of these things here. I just happen to have one of these, which is a mallet. Okay. I was just wondering then, what's this got to do with anything? Let's think about Jesus for a minute. Jesus' earthly father, Joseph, was a... Now, there's a word there that means craftsman. It could mean stonemason or carpenter. Okay, we're not sure. There's not enough information. If he was a carpenter, then Jesus was probably a carpenter. If he was a stonemason, then Jesus was probably trained as a stonemason. Let's go with carpenter because that's what we usually run with. Okay, so Jesus probably trained up with some of these tools because the tools didn't change that much. Okay, but they did change a little bit. I want to show you something that changed from this picture to the next picture. Whoops, wrong way. Round about 100 BC, the Romans put out a coin, and on the back of the coin, there was a griffin and a hand plane. Can you see the hand plane on the right-hand side under the griffin? Okay, good on you. There's another picture there. There's that thing. It's a bit unclear what it is, right, but that's a hand plane underneath the griffin. You may never have seen a picture of a hand plane under a griffin before, but let's... Okay, something new is happening now. 100 BC, that means 100 BC, 100 years before Jesus was even born, okay, they had hand planes. They also had saws. Let me show you the saw that he might have had. Those copper saws were superseded by bronze-bladed saws. And bronze-bladed saws, you didn't need so much metal, but you had to hold it steady. And so he might have had a thing like this. These were around in Jesus' time. There's pictures of those too. And basically, you wind this up, and then it pulls on the top, and then it straight, and then pulls the blade out. This is a steel blade. It's a little bit thinner than what they would have been back in the day. The bronze saws, this is a turning saw. He would have had probably a frame saw. It's the same setup, except the blade is about three times as thick. Made of bronze. You don't want to tighten it up too much, and it goes blunt quicker than steel, but it does the job. So Jesus might have had one of these. And this is the hand plane, okay? Let's change my notes here. His might have looked like this, or it might not have looked just like this. This is one found at Pompeii. This one's been buried by a volcano, okay? So it's not in the best of condition, all right? It could have, might have looked better when it was new. But they did find this one at Pompeii, underneath the ashes. And they found another one, a Roman one, found in Northern Europe, Germany, I think, at the bottom of a well. And the original one is the one at the front. It looks a bit worse for wear because it's been sitting in a well for hundreds and hundreds of years, thousands of years. There's a reproduction at the back there of what that might look like when it was new. So these planes have been around, and Jesus probably would have had one. And this is one that I have got. Now, I only got it recently. I got curious about it, and I'll show you how it works. The back of it here is all beaten in, because the way you use it, if you want to change the depth of the blade, so the blade comes through here at the bottom, and you push it along, and it scrapes the wood, okay? You can't pull this out. Oh, I did. You can't pull this out very easily, right? But what you do, you hit it like this, and then the body of the plane jumps forward, but the blade doesn't move so far forward, and then you can pull it out. That's inertia. That's physics, okay? So then you pop it, you put your finger down here like this and get the blade in the right place. You put the wedge on the top, and you give that a little tap, and now it's pretty much locked in place, okay? So now it's locked in place, right? And you want to get it off again, you have to tap the back here like this. So you bang it. And you need a mallet. All right, bend that down. So let me tell you about my saw, my chisel, my plane. It's a plane, okay? I was curious about the planes, okay? These are wooden planes. These have been around for, well, since 100 BC or a bit before that, right up until very recently. But not probably not so, you can't buy these new so easy now. There are places, but not very many. So they've been around a really long time. So I was curious, and I looked into it. I researched it. I wanted to know more about these planes. So I researched, and it took me days and days, not during work time. At other times, in the evenings, I'd like look these things up. And in the end, I wanted to get one. And so it was down south of Geelong, all right? So it's not very close. I had to take a bit of a risk in going. Even if I drove to Geelong, I was using up my time to drive all the way to Geelong to go and look at one of these planes. And so I took a bit of a risk. And in fact, someone from my family bought it for me. I invested a few dollars, not very many, and then I got it. And it was in terrible condition, okay? It was cheap, but it was in shocking condition. Like, I was horrified. Didn't even want to touch it. So I was discouraged, okay? Here's a list of things that will happen here. Then, how do you restore an old wood plane? Well, I don't know. I have to find out. So do some more research, trial and error. A few things had to happen. It had a crack in it. It had some other things wrong with it. Had a bit in the front here that had to get taken off because I couldn't leave it like that. Bits got cut off. There was sanding involved. The plane, the actual blade here had to be repaired. Okay, come off. It was a bit rusty, had to polish that up. That took a bit of time. I didn't want to damage it though in fixing it. Things had to be glued. The wedge here has got a new end on it because that was all no good and had to be replaced with some epoxy on the end to make it long enough to work. The wood had to be oiled. Now, it's very, very dry wood. And I put some oil on it and just soaked right in. I put some more on, soaked right in, put some more on, soaked right in. So it was very, very dry from not having been oiled for a long time, perhaps ever. And then there's a polishing process to make it look as good as what I could make it. I haven't sanded it right down to like absolutely clear wood. I've left some of the marks of age, so it looks a little bit, not ruined by the restoration process. So, okay, that was fun. It was also, when I did the effort, like it took me a whole day, like I worked on this for a whole Saturday, all right? Apart from the research part, it took me a day to get it up to, it was like about 3 weeks ago, okay? So, Fine. It was work, but it was play. It was fun work. All right? So what? Well, turns out that God wants us to work on our relationships. Okay? Work on our relationships. And for a person like myself who doesn't take to relationships easily, maybe I can learn something from the whole process of restoring the plane. Use the same ideas, like use the same things that I did. And so how about being curious, open-minded to relationships? Where are my relationships? What, you know, have a bit of curiosity, ask some questions, do some research. Would I invest time in learning about a relationship, learning about someone? Maybe I could do that. Do relationships take a risk? Sometimes, yes. When you want to fix up your relationship, it takes a risk. You might have to invest a few dollars, like buy a coffee or something like that, buy a present, whatever it takes, buy some new clothes to look good enough so you can actually go and see the person. I don't know, whatever it takes. Can you be disappointed when you make your first effort and it doesn't work out like you hoped? Yes. It takes a little bit of personal resilience because you say, hey, let's go for coffee, and they say, no, don't want to, I'm busy. Okay, oh, that's disappointing. Well, are you going to give up straight away or are you going to keep going? And then trial and error, like that's more risk-taking really, like try this, try that. How can I improve my relationship with my work colleague? What can I do, you know? Like, I don't know, try something, falls flat, try again, try something else. And it's going to take some work and you can play at it. So it doesn't have to be like work as in terrible work. It can be, you know, just like a hobby, just give it a shot. And I'm not sure about cutting, sanding, gluing, epoxying, oiling. Well, you know, I could draw out the analogy, right? I could play the story of, you know, stopping some things and fixing other things and healing processes with the oil and polishing up that relationship. Still love my plane here. It says at the on this blade, it says on the blade, warranted cast steel, Zollingen, Germany. Now, there's a prize for anybody who can tell me anything about Zollingen, Germany. First prize goes to, tell me where it is. Where in Germany? Yes, we know it says it's in Germany already. Where in Germany is Zollingen? South, okay. Good. South Germany. What's Zollingen famous for? Okay. You're the judge. Does he get it? Or does he get it? This side? All right. Can you... This is the prize. The actual plane, restored antique plane. It's 100 years old, by the way. I've looked it up. The gentleman at the back. Really?
Yeah.
Is a visitor from Germany who knows where Zollingen is? Yeah. Fantastic. All right? Isn't that great? Good. Well, welcome to the church. I saw you last week, and you now have a prize for knowing exactly what you needed to know for today. There's a point to the gift as well. I'll get back to that. Okay. So, our relationships, even if you're not good at relationships, okay, you can take the time and, like, figure out. Even if you're only good at, like, fixing up old planes, you can still use the same ideas and, like, apply that to relationships. And some of the relationships which you might need to have a focus on is maybe your relationship with God, relationship with yourself, understanding yourself, and then also how to love others as well. If you wanted to go the whole hog, as it were, full on, you could come to a connect group. That's a good place. So this church has got connect groups where you can come along, you can connect with people, have relationships, learn about each other, be friends, learn more about God, that sort of thing. Practice all these things we've been talking about just now. There's the MST. If you want to do a course, you can do that. Don't think that you're too old. I know read recently about someone who's like 80 years old and they got their PhD. Not that I'm suggesting you have to do a PhD, I'm just saying when the kids are out of the house, that's actually maybe a good time to actually take up some more study. Wellspring Centre, they do spiritual companioning, like we used to call it spiritual direction. You can get some help learning about reflection or contemplation or meditation, Christian meditation. It's a Christian place. And then if you wanted to do some sort of like marriage counselling or marriage course, like a marriage retreat, go away for the weekend, think about your relationship with your spouse and fix things up a bit if they need fixing. These are some things you can do. I'm not recommending them as, like, I'm not saying you have to, I'm just saying it's a possibility. So, let's get to the Jesus part of our story today, away from the planes for a moment. Jesus changes everything. Why Jesus? Why would we say in this theory, this series, that Jesus changes everything? Well, here's some words from John chapter 1. The Word, that means Jesus, the Word gave life to everything that was created, and his life brought light to everyone. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness cannot extinguish it. So it's actually, when we're saying Jesus changes everything, God changes everything, and God can bring light and life into your life. The game of life, the experience of life, can be enlightened and enlivened through Jesus. That's why we're saying Jesus changes everything. For example, recently I had an opportunity to see a counsellor, which was a good opportunity. I took the opportunity, I took the risk, okay? Took the opportunity to see a counsellor, and the thing was that I was overreacting to a situation and it was causing trouble, okay? There was obviously trouble. I admitted that there was trouble, I acknowledged there was trouble, and I also acknowledged that I had a part to play in that. The counsellor asked me a few questions over a period of 2 hours, two separate hours. It wasn't too hard, it was just easy. Sit down, have a talk. Turned out that I was remembering certain situations, I was remembering something from my childhood. Okay? And this was I was overreacting in that situation. Okay? And I had not known that before. It was just by answering some simple questions, as soon as the words came out of my mouth, I thought, oh, that's what's happening. I understand now why I'm overreacting. As soon as I started to understand why I was overreacting, I didn't feel like I had to overreact so much. I didn't want to overreact in the first place, but I acknowledged I was overreacting. And now, not so much. So just by talking for an hour or two to somebody who asked the right questions, I got an insight into my own life, and problems gone right down. Fantastic. So why on earth then, like go back a minute, why would I want to understand more about myself? Because I can tell you, if I don't understand myself, I do things I don't want to do. When I understand myself better, my motivations, my thinking, my background, my history, I can actually come to terms with things in a way I couldn't come to terms with before. So yes, it's important. It's important. I want to have life and light in my life. That's what Jesus brings. Now, you might say, how does this actually work? Okay? Some people like the answers to that question. Why? How does this work? How does this work? In Romans chapter 5, it uses an analogy. Now, run with me on this one. It uses an analogy from football. Now, you might not have realised that there's an analogy from football in the Bible. It doesn't exactly say football, right? It says something else, but it reminds me of football very much. Romans chapter 5, second half of the chapter. It says there are two captains. One captain is Adam, the other captain is Jesus. Both captains have got teams, okay? Chances are you're in one team or the other team. If you want to be in Jesus' team, you have to do a transfer from the other team. So all you have to do, really, is make the application, apply for the transfer, and the transfer will be granted. Okay, then you'll be on Jesus' team. So there's this stuff here about Jesus giving life and light and everything. That's like, you want to be on Jesus' team. If you want to get the goodies, you have to be on the right team. Now, there is a transfer fee, and it's a large transfer fee, but fortunately, Jesus has already paid. Okay, so the transfer fee, like you couldn't afford it yourself, right? Someone has to pay it. And Jesus paid the transfer fee. All you have to do is just ask. You have to apply, to like just ask God, can I be on the Jesus team? And basically it's granted. It's like it's a thing. It's like the gift that is given. And you just have to say, and then like you get the thing. Like you just have to say that you want it, basically, and that's what you can get that. Just apply. So if you've ever considered yourself like you're not on Jesus' team, but you'd like to be on Jesus' team, just ask Jesus and say, can I be on your team? And the answer is, yes, you can. That's how it works. You just ask and you get it. Now, I must just mention that Jesus' team is not exactly a fan club. It might look like a fan club, but it's not simply a fan club. You are expected to actually turn up and play on the team. You're not really supposed to just do a few warm-up laps at the start of the game and then sit out the rest of the time. Everybody gets game time. Okay, so you're in the game. Doesn't mean that you sort of, you know, have to be working really hard the whole time, but you're going to have some time each week on the field. So you're expected to participate, basically. But as long as you're good for that, as long as you actually want to be on the team and participate in the game, just ask and you're in. If you don't believe me, look in Romans chapter 5, second half. It says it's a gift and it says you just have to ask and you're on the team. So, a challenge for this week. How about you go back and look at one of your relationships, that one or that one, and do something to improve that relationship. I'm not going to say which relationship. I'm not going to say what you have to do. Just think of one of your relationships, your relationship with God, relationship with loving and understanding, accepting yourself, or a relationship with some other person, and do something to make that a better relationship. Now, I'm not saying it's actually going to work out with happiness, but give it a shot. That's what we're called to do. That's what Heather read at the beginning of the service here. God wants us to love one another. So we might actually have to do something to make that happen. There's the challenge. So, read Romans chapter 5. It's all there. Catch you later. Bye.